The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, "Things happen when people start talking." You can find information regarding forums, salons, and tours at cityclubofboise.org. The premier sponsor for the City Club of Boise is Northwest Nazarene University and the NNU School of Business. Annual sponsor for the City Club is St. Luke's Health System. The moderator for today's forum is Jeremy Parkinson.
Welcome to today's City Club Forum, Flagrant Foul, the Growing Problem of Incivility in Youth Sports. I'm Jeremy Parkinson, president of City Club, Bank of Idaho Trust and Wealth Management manager, former high school basketball coach, part-time high school referee, and moderator of today's forum. I would like to mention that I did bring my official's whistle today in case we have any incivility up here or in the audience, so please keep it civil today because I'm not afraid of using it. I would like to welcome our radio listeners to today's forum. Joining us over Boise State University Public Radio on KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates throughout southern Idaho and northern Nevada. Today's forum is available for our audience in large part because of our City Club sponsors, a lot of who Jane mentioned. I'd like to also take some time to thank a few of the organizations that help us achieve our mission to ensure compelling conversations, engage citizens, and dynamic community. Thank you to our media partners, which include Boise State University Public Radio, 670 KBOI, the Idaho Statesman, and Idaho Public Television. And we'd like to thank our university partners, University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Northwest Nazarene University. As Jane mentioned, we are delighted to have high school students in attendance today from Bishop Kelly High School. I believe that's the first time we've had some from Bishop Kelly, so thank you for being here. And Riverstone International School. We look forward to your student questions. Please make sure to notate that you're a student when you fill out your question card. Speaking of which, following our panelists' opening remarks, there's an opportunity for them to respond to audience questions. In fact, most of the day will be a question and answer period. There are question cards at your table. Look just like this. If you have a question, please fill out one of the cards, hold it up, and a volunteer will gather them and bring them to the podium. And I will do my best to present each question and may group similar questions together in the essence of time. So today's City Club of Boise Forum is a conversation about the growing problem of incivility in youth sports. We've all read the headlines, seen the tweets, read the Facebook, Instagram, or Snapchat posts, or whatever other social media I may be too old or missing out on. Things such as parents brawl over a 13-year-old umpire's call at youth baseball game. Incivility in stands is taking a toll on youth athletics. Incivility is driving high school coaches from the profession. Dealing with unruly fans, it's not just a problem anymore, it's an epidemic. Certainly this is not a problem here in Idaho, right? Today we are going to hear from a panel of local experts who are intimately involved with youth sports. They will help us understand some of the issues they are facing with parents and fans right here in Boise, Idaho. We look forward to their insight into this issue, and ultimately, we hope to hear more about some things that are being done in a positive manner to help promote better sportsmanship and civility in those youth sports. Let me quickly introduce our panelists, and once I get through with the introductions of everybody, they'll each have a few minutes for some opening remarks. So first, John Ruzicka is the athletic director for the Boise School District. He was a three-sport athlete playing football, basketball, and track in high school. He went on to play college football, and his first job was teaching math at Centennial High School in the late 80s, where he also coached varsity football, basketball, and track. In 1998, John moved into administration, where he served as an assistant principal for 5 years. He then served as principal of Capital High School for 13 years and is now the district athletic director and supervisor of PE and health for the Boise School District. He's been part of public education for 32 years. He's married to his lovely wife, Michelle, and they have 2 children. Next is Kim Bridges. Kim is a teacher at Boise High School and the varsity girls basketball coach. She was a three-sport high school athlete playing soccer, basketball, and softball in Mount Vernon, Washington. She accepted a full scholarship to play basketball at Boise State University. Upon graduation, she was hired to teach language arts and coach 3 sports at Centennial High School. You have that in common, it looks like. Centennial was a starting ground. She then migrated to Denver, Colorado, where she taught and coached while she was completing her master's degree in administration. In 03, Kim returned to Boise, accepted a teaching position at Boise High School, and in 2005 was named the head basketball girls coach. In 2012, Kim received the Pesky Award for inspirational teaching, and in 2019, she was named the Idaho Youth Sports Commission High School Positive Impact Coach. Kim currently teaches 11th grade English, as well as video broadcasting and production at Boise High School, and she serves as a representative on the 5A 3rd District Coaches Board. And by the way, congratulations. Last night, her team with a victory, big victory over Eagle in the district tournament, to qualify for state again this year. Congratulations on that. Having coached against Kim a little bit, I have a lot of respect for Kim. Sean Weatherston is currently serving as the basketball director for the 3rd District Basketball Officials Association and is responsible for the recruitment, training, and advancement of nearly 200 basketball officials in the Treasure Valley. He's been an official for 20 years, including 14 years as a college referee. When not on the basketball floor, Sean is a physical therapist and has been the owner of Altitude Physical Therapy in Nampa and Caldwell for 15 years. He's married to a very patient wife who isn't afraid to tell people in the stands that the person they just yelled at is her husband. They have 5 children and 2 grandchildren. Welcome, Sean. Finally, Tim Brady is the director of the Idaho Youth Sports Commission. Tim was a multi-sport athlete competing in cross country, wrestling, and basketball. Oh, and track, it looks like, as well. And he competed in track at Boise State University. He coached youth sports for 16 years, including football, basketball, baseball, and soccer. Tim also coached track and basketball at the high school level. He's been the executive director for the Idaho Youth Sports Commission for the past 2 years after retiring from a 40-year career in the sporting goods industry. Tim received his bachelor's degree from Boise State and his master's in athletic administration from Idaho State University. He also received his parent coaching certification from Seattle Pacific University and is certified in the art of positive parenting instructional workshops. Tim has been married to his wife, Kelly, for 36 years, and they have 2 children and are also proud sports grandparents of 5 grandchildren, it looks like. Welcome, Tim. Please help me in welcoming our panelists today. So I've asked the panelists to tell us in just a few minutes more about how they have seen youth sports, and in particular maybe parent and fan involvement, evolve over the years of their careers. Most of them have been involved for many, many years. And you know, are these headlines that we read, are they abnormalities, or do you see some of this in your role? John, you know, we're going to start with you and work our way on down the table. John.
Good afternoon. Jeremy, thanks again for the invitation for all of us to be here. We really appreciate that, to be here at City Club. It's great to be here. Also, I'd like to just thank Tim Brady with the Idaho Youth Sports Commission as well. Tim, with his commission, has given the Boise School District some grant money to do some trainings and workshops to help parents, to help coaches, and to help our athletes. And really, we would fall short of our goal of doing what we're doing without Tim's support. So, Tim, thank you for that support. And I know some of the members of the Idaho Youth Sports Commission are here today, so thank you. So, as Jeremy said, I've been part of, you know, athletics pretty much all my life in this valley since 1987. And, you know, through the course of being a coach and assistant principal and principal and now district athletic director, you know, these things that we see now, they've been around since I was in school, right? We've seen angry parents and that stuff going on with officials and just all of that. And what's really fortunate for me is in the role of district AD, I was fortunate enough to come across a program from Positive Coaching Alliance that, in my opinion, helps me deliver a better product. It's focused, it's research-driven, and it clearly assigns a role of what we want coaches to be doing, what we want parents to do, and what it's all about for the athlete. And I'll be honest with you, I've have been looking for a program that we're now using. We're about a little bit less than 2 years in implementation of this program in Boise schools. And the results and the end product that we're seeing so far have been positive. And it's the results that we like to see. Are we perfect? You know, we probably have a 92 in the grade book, but we're going to get to 100. That's the goal. We'd like to have a 100% in the grade book around everything that we're doing. And I'll kind of come back in a minute and talk a little bit about, you know, what Positive Coaching Alliance is about, what we do with our coaches. I'm trained to do coach workshops. I'm trained to do parent workshops. I'm also trained to do workshops with our athletes. And so, you know, the best part of my job is I get to do all three of those workshops. I get to interact closely with parents and the athletes and the coaches. And so it's really been a lot of fun to do this. It's the right work to be doing. And like I said, I'm really encouraged about the results that we're starting to see as we've begun this work. And so, like I said, we're about a year and a half into it. And I think once we kind of go through the panel and talk a little bit about what everybody's role, I'd like to come back and just talk a little bit in depth. It's a two-hour workshop, but I'll do it in about 7 minutes for everybody. But it'll be great to just kind of give you a little glimpse of what Positive Coaching Alliance is doing for our parents and our coaches and our kids. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Kim, let's get the coach's perspective.
Coach's perspective. Well, I'm skipped out of school right now, so I was able to come down here, have a wonderful lunch, a much more relaxed lunch than I usually get. So thank you so much for that, Jeremy. Looking in the audience, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of friendly faces. And Trish, I'm going to zero in on you. I didn't know you were coming today, but Trish Stevens, who's in the crowd, she was one of my coaches at Boise State University, and I've always considered her a very powerful mentor for me. I wanted to start our conversation just sort of talking about something that was really ingrained into me as a young student athlete, and that was control the controllables. And I don't know if I can credit you with that, Trish, or somebody else, but I know that was something that was very important to me as a student athlete, and that's something that we preach within our program right now. And of course, when we talk about controlling the controllables, I can't control whether or not Sean saw that foul. I'll try. I can't control it, but I can definitely control my reaction to that. And the same thing with our student athletes. You know, we tell our student athletes, you can't necessarily control how many minutes you're going to get in the game, but I promise you, you can control your effort, your attitude, your enthusiasm, both in practice and on the bench. And those things are probably going to contribute to those minutes. So that's something that we've always talked about. And then about 2 years ago, John asked me and Scott Moore, who's a head boys coach at Capital High School, to come and have breakfast with him. And I thought, oh boy, am I in trouble? He bought us breakfast, so that was great. You can see I'm into free food. I'm a school teacher. I don't know if I mentioned that. Anyway, so we went and had breakfast, and John talked about this Positive Coaching Alliance, and he is so passionate about it. He'll speak more on this, but he was so passionate about it, and he immediately got Scott and I so excited about this program. So that was June, and over the course of the summer, both Scott and I independently bought some more literature, researched more on our own, and tried to figure out ways that we could implement these PCA concepts into our programs. And I think some of the big takeaways for me, this whole control the controllables, they encapsulated into something else. They just call it ELM. And so they talk about student athletes really being concerned about their effort, their learning, and their response to mistakes. That's what the acronym stands for. So what we tried to do is we tried to figure out how can we infuse more positivity into everything that we do. I'm wearing these wristbands. I've got a couple on my wrist. And this is something that was inspired by our work with PCA. On one side, it says positive energy matters. And on the other side, it says, what did you bring? And I try to give these out to anybody that will take them, truly. Within our team, we have a program-wide retreat. We use that retreat. All the coaches on our staff participate in that retreat. And all of our coaches participate, whether they're leading an activity or a session. I usually do a good 20-minute little short session, say with my sophomore team, talking about ELM, talking about tank fillers, talking about the other PCA concepts. And so it's been really positive. We pass these out to our parents at our preseason basketball meeting. We talk about what it is. We pass them out at our clinics. We have parent-daughter clinics. We talk and we preach to those parents. And so to me, those are the things that I can control. I can't always control some of the things that are said. Truly, as a coach, when I'm coaching, I don't hear a lot of that. I'm going to be real honest. I'm kind of locked in on what's in between the baselines, and I don't hear a lot of that. Afterwards, they'll say, oh, my gosh, did you hear so-and-so? And I'm like, no, I did not. So I'm really locked into what I'm doing as a coach. But I know there are some changing behaviors, but I'm just trying to control what I can control, which has been a really positive thing for our entire program. So,
thank you, Kim. Sean, let's get the official's perspective down here.
Well, probably the number one question that many of you have thought when you've seen an official that I get asked is, why in the world would you do that? Why would you put yourself under that kind of scrutiny and under that kind of torture? And really, the reason is that for the same reason that we played sports to begin with, because we want to be active. It's a good social outlet. You learn all kinds of great life lessons, you know, how to handle conflict, how if somebody's giving you the wrong end of the stick, you know, how do you come back from that? How do you handle winning? How do you handle losing? All those kinds of things there are parallels for officiating in that as well. And just the love of the game that's developed for me over the years playing basketball growing up. And it really is an amazing thing. And knowing that I was going to get older and slow down and wouldn't be able to play at whatever high level I thought I may have been able to play at, that wasn't very high level to begin with. But just to be able to stay in the game was a huge draw for me, and that's what keeps me coming back. The energy that comes from being involved with great coaches like Kim or players, or just the roar and the energy that comes off from a crowd in a big game when you make that big call is great. And there's some times where you see a great dunk or a great steal and you just think, I have the greatest seat in the house, and this is so much fun. Some of the changes that have happened that I've noticed over my 20 years, as with anything, some of the changes result in some good positive reactions and some not so good as well. We'll talk probably more about this. I'm sure this is probably some of the questions that Jeremy will ask. But there's a lot more opportunities now with the preponderance of club teams. That can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. Video, the technology. We are under immense scrutiny as officials because what used to be a grainy VHS tape that if you slowed down, it was just a blur anyway, and you could say, well, somebody could say that you missed it. Another person could say that, well, you got it right just because the blur looked one way or the other. That's completely changed now. And everybody has a camera in their pocket, and so you can get 1,000 different points of view, and so that puts us under more scrutiny and under more observation. We're under a microscope, which can be a good thing because it's not a bad thing for us to have more accountability and use that as a tool to make sure that we're in better position or that we're seeing things better, that we are being more consistent. But then at the same time, coaches and parents and players have a lot of bias, and so their point of view may be rather skewed when they're doing that. And then when they take to social media to share that point of view, that can cause some problems. And that's one of the issues that we're having as far as being able to retain new officials. I've done it long enough that I'm like Kim, what she just mentioned, that she really doesn't hear a lot of the flack. I really, honestly, unless somebody would have to come and onto the floor and probably tap me on the chest and say something to me for me to really be able to hear it. I try and most coaches I tune in, some I tune out, I'll admit to that. But you know, you just get into the flow of the game and you're just trying to do your job. But yeah, it's been a very fun 20 years. Hopefully my knees will hold out and I can do it for another 20 years. And I'm very thankful for this opportunity. I look forward to talking with the panelists. We're already working on some ways to help improve communication and help things in the future. And hopefully we'll have a good audience of people here who will be able to go forward and make some positive changes.
Thanks, Sean. And Tim, I'll let you wrap it up here.
Well, when we talk about this incivility in youth sports, you know, there really is a lot of, as you all know, there's a lot of good in youth sports. But there's a lot of noise out there, a lot of negativity that gets a lot of play. And it's hard to remember sometimes to bring ourselves back to the true benefits of sport and why kids play, to refocus and be aware of those kinds of things. And, you know, we don't always parent and coach to the why kids play. And so about 6 years ago or so, we brought some influencers in the community together to start the Idaho Youth Sports Commission. And one of those, Trish Stevens Lamb, on our advisory board, she was in those early conversations. And we came up with this objective to build a community of parents, coaches, and administrators who teach not only the value of winning and losing, but to this greater purpose of life lessons, fitness, and fun. And some of these influencers, John and Kim, are on our board. They came along. And Roger Madison, Roger, would you raise your hand there? Roger's on our executive board. And Tim Brennan, next to Roger there, is on our coaches board. So I'm not that smart a guy, but I am smart enough to get smart people around me and influencers who make a difference. And guys like John Cunningham, who John is the manager of the Grove Hotel, and we bring these Positive Coaching Alliance people in from Portland the last couple of years, sometimes to do workshops and sometimes just connect with us. And John puts them up for free or at a very significant discount. So thank you, John. I'm not supposed to say that. Is your boss here? But, you know, there's really, when you think about sports, I think there's two ends of the spectrum here. There's one end here where we have this win at all cost or win at too big a cost mindset. And then on the other hand, we have, on the other side, we have this everybody gets a trophy and it's all about balloons and cake and ice cream and fun, which maybe at the real young levels, that's what it should be about. But really what we should be shooting for is this middle ground where kids compete and they compete with this the right way and with a growth mindset focus. And all the while with this character and sportsmanship piece and these awesome life lessons that y'all know that come from sports. And these guys will talk about them a little bit later. But, you know, they say that sports builds character, and that doesn't just happen. It only happens when the leadership is right. That's when sports does develop character, and that's what we're working on. And when the leadership is right, we get to this development zone for kids that it becomes a place where they do compete and learn to fail and learn to bounce back and learn to be resilient and how to be a great teammate and how to be responsible and accountable. Those are the things we're looking for. And when we get to that place of this truly where it's a development zone, sports, I believe, is the greatest classroom, the last classroom of the day. And I think it's a place where there's no other place to learn such great lessons. And when we do it right, we all win, because not only do we develop better players, we develop better people who become our next generation of coaches, parents, employees, employers, and leaders in our community. So, Jeremy, thank you for having this, and thank you all for being here.
Thank you. I've got some questions, and thank you, audience, for getting some questions going here. I kind of wanted to get to just kind of the core of the question here, I guess, a little bit, in that, you know, we've read some of those headlines, you know. Is it a matter of just things are getting covered more, and so we see a little more of that, where parents maybe are stepping across the bounds a little bit, fans maybe stepping around, or is there something more to it than just being covered more? Anybody care to comment on that one? John?
Yeah, I'd like to maybe talk a little bit about that. I think, you know, coaches and student-athletes and parents right now are under more pressure than ever before. There's just pressure. I have a 10-year-old great-nephew in town, and by the time he's in seventh grade, he will have played more basketball games than I did in my entire career up through high school. I mean, stop and think about that. By seventh grade, so when he's about 12, because he plays games every weekend for 3 days, he plays multiple games a day, and he's 10. And he gets to go to Phoenix and Las Vegas and, you know, travel around. And it's a great opportunity, but boy, that's a lot of games. And some of the parents that I've talked to have a perspective that they just feel the pressure that they have to do that, and they've got to start at age 5, or they've got to start that process at age 6, or maybe they won't make it. And make it could be different things. Maybe they won't make the varsity team as a junior or a senior. Maybe they won't make it to college and to get that scholarship. Whatever the definition that might be for that family, for that child. And so, you know, the days of kind of playing in the neighborhood and playing games that we would just make up, a lot of those weekend games that we did when I was a kid, I would have been traveling around now. I would be going to Vegas and Phoenix and Seattle and Portland to play games. And so that puts our kids in a high pressure. That's possibly early, and there's a lot going on there. I think parents feel the pressure of when they do get to a varsity team and their child's on a varsity team, they've invested a huge amount of resource and time, their talent and their treasure, their money, to do all of that. And when they get there, it can be just a process that builds up so much expectation that it can be sometimes too much to handle. And to come back to what we all believe with trying to become, you know, grounded back into what this is all about for their child. But boy, there is just so much pressure there, and we have to untangle that, we have to unravel that and get back to the core of what that's about. And that's really, you know, I don't have to go into that right now, but that's a little bit of what we talk about in the parent workshops that I do, is just going back to the goals that they have for their child and really taking the time to just catch our breath and say, what is this about for your child? What when it's all said and done, what is it that you truly want deep down when you think about it? When you connect your head to your heart, what do you want your child to have? And a lot of times, parents have it right. They do. They want their child to have a great experience. They want to learn life lessons, hard work, accountability, time management, character, all of the things that we all learned ourselves being around athletics. What happens in that process sometimes, what we say and what we do can get a little bit different, right? And so the program talks about and helps parents just stay to their core mission of what their goal is for their child. And so there, I think it's pressure. You know, there's a lot of things how that pressure could get there from what they invest, social media, you know, scholarships, social pressure. You know, I had two sons that went through the Boise schools and you know, played. And I remember all the time people talking about, you know, where's your son going to school? And is he going to play football? Is he going to play basketball? Is he, you know, and sometimes that can be just keep mounting up to that pressure cooker for the kids and the parents. And so it's quite a few things, I think, that are new for our parents.
Kim, maybe from the time you played, maybe your coaching career, from, you know, have you seen difference in the way parents are involved, I guess, with interactions with coaches and officials and things like that?
Yes, I think pressure is a big part of it. I think John hit on a big part of it. But I also think that some parents today are a lot more knowledgeable about the sport than perhaps when I played in the past. You know, and so they feel not only through the investment, but possibly because they've been watching Johnny play since he was, you know, a five-year-old, that they know more about what's going on with the game. And so I feel like they are more invested. It's very common for our program parents to approach me and they'll ask direction for club teams. You know, where should we put our kid? What club should we put them in? And I will never answer that question because my response is always the same. And the response is you need to pick the right decision, not only for your family in terms of commitment, but in terms of financial ability. Because some of these clubs do what John's describing. And, I mean, there's a lot of great competition here in the local area that I think you can get without having to travel to Portland every other weekend. So I think there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of avenues. And I don't necessarily, I've coached club. I don't any longer, but I've coached club before. And there's definitely a purpose for that. And it helps get our kids some attention that they need. But I do think that it becomes, you know, you're getting behind. And that's one of the big things that you guys have all heard the adage, if you're not practicing, what do we say, someone else is, right? When you're not practicing, someone else is. I had a student athlete graduate last year, and she used to say, oh, coach, I'm grinding. Emily, you know what I'm talking about. I'm grinding. And I said, well, if you keep grinding, you're going to be hamburger. That's what I would say back to her. You have to give your body a break. You have to give yourself, you know, a mental break, a physical break, and you have to realize why you're doing this. And if it's not for the love of sport and for the competition and for the love of your team and your program, then I ask why you're doing it.
Very good. It kind of leads to a question I had about burnout. I mean, yeah. Do you find these kids that are under that kind of pressure and grinding so hard that they're burning out at some point? And what about coaches, too? I mean, coaches are under some pressure, officials as well. Talk a little bit about burnout, and I don't know who wants to lead on that. Sean, you want to talk a little bit on the official side on that?
Well, to some extent, it's a physical game, especially when we talk about the club season, and that's kind of the topic that we're on right now. There is a vast shortage of officials throughout the country. And when we talk about these weekends for AAU and club teams and things like that, I'm talking specifically about basketball. Sometimes we're called on to do up to 8 or 10 games in one day. And that is a grind physically. And then when you consider the number of decisions that we're having to make in that hour-long game, it gets to be very emotionally taxing as well. And then when you throw in the fact that you have parents who have spent thousands of dollars for their kids to be part of that club team, not to mention the thousands of dollars that they spent coming to these, you know, travel games and things like that. And so the pressure that the parents feel can come to a point, and the target is the official who called the foul on Johnny or Susie, and they've been working really hard, and yes, they missed that shot, but somebody breathed on them, and so that had to be a foul, and so we're going to take it out on you, and you know, it kind of goes that way. So there's the physical emotion, the physical and emotional burnout for that, but then there's the cumulative effect of constantly hearing negativity from fans and from coaches, and I'll pinpoint the AAU or the club scene for that as well. Most of the incidents that happen that you're going to see on Facebook or read about on Twitter, that will happen in that type of setting. We've had a few small incidents that have happened in the schools, but those are very, very rare, and that's usually because we do have a good support system from the coaches and the administrators that won't allow that to happen. But when we're talking about the club scene, we're talking about, you know, multiple gyms that are going at the same time in the same venue, and there's no security, and, I mean, it's just a problem because there isn't that administrative support. And so that's when parents and coaches can be a little bit more abusive to officials. And again, when you're cutting your teeth as an official, you're working a lot of those games to try and get some experience, and that can be very traumatic. I don't want to overuse that word, but it definitely, you have to build up a thick skin and avoid the rabbit ears, like Kim and I were talking about earlier. So that can definitely be a challenge, and that can have an effect on whether or not people want to continue doing it. And I think it's a problem for people who maybe would consider refereeing, but it's going to be a big issue with them when they see how other officials get treated and say, there's no way I want to have anything to do with that. So I think we're not even getting people to join the officiating rings because they see the amount of flack that current officials are taking.
Great. That leads to a question from the audience here. Those of you who have officiated games, have you ever had to have security escort you to your car after a game? Or maybe are you aware of any of that ever happening? John, you can talk in the district, and maybe Sean can talk specifically.
You want to go? Okay. A couple times. Twice in a high school gym, a high school game. One was a junior high game, one was a high school game. And then one, I had a coach that wanted to meet me in the parking lot after a club game, and, you know, you just... Okay, I'll just stay in the gym for a while. I don't want to. You're bigger than me. I don't want to mess with you. So that does happen. But again, for the most part, 99% of the time, in the school setting, we're covered. I mean, the administrators are there. They're present. They're going to prevent that from happening in the first place. And I'm sure John is happy to hear that.
John, yeah. And John, you know, you can also speak. You know, we're kind of basketball heavy here, but it's not just a basketball issue, right?
Oh, totally. You know. Lucky for me, I've had no personal experience where I've had that happen at the schools that I've been working at. However, in the Valley, we host girls and boys basketball tournaments at our schools for state tournament. And the two-way tournament back when I was principal at Capitol is at Capitol, still is, two-way boys basketball tournament. And we did. We had to get the officials off the floor. It was heated somewhat from some of the smaller schools that were there, and we did escort the official for their safety and just making sure everything was going to be, you know, safe to their car. So it happens frequently, but like I said, luckily for me, that's the only time that I've had to do that, because we are present in the gyms, and it's an expectation in the district and in our conference for administrators to be in the gyms. And, you know, one thing I'd just like to add to what Sean said is, You know, a lot of times when you're working a varsity game, there, you know, the principal and the AD and the administrators are there. Where we've seen lately, just early, the games that get a little bit contentious can be a sub-varsity game. It can be the sophomore game, and it can be the JV game, where we need to have a real strong presence of administration. Because if you've ever officiated, the games that are really hard to officiate are the sub-varsity games, because there can be just awkward things that happen, a collision, and a kid runs across the floor and doesn't mean to. He just runs right into another player, and it's like, what was that? You know, they're just, things get awkward sometimes, and for an official, it can be, holy cow, that just happened. What am I supposed to do? That wasn't supposed to happen, and that rarely happens in a varsity game. So there's so much flow, and there's so much kind of the routine of the kids is real natural at a varsity game. And in some regard, it's easier to officiate somewhat. There's still pressure, don't get me wrong, but some of those sub-varsity games can really be where we've seen some issues. And so we've increased our administration around there, making sure that those officials have support.
Thanks. Tim, I know you interact with a lot of coaches and stuff too, and I know you just sent me a text or email the other day about some fan running over to this, some other fan, and after a game, you've got some experience with this too.
Well, for sure, emotions tend to run the show in sports with parents, and I think the one thing I heard that made a lot of sense to me was from actually one of these positive Coach Lance workshop trainers from San Francisco, and she said, you know, you can't, it's really, if you try to control your emotions, that can be really hard to do, because it's highly charged and emotional in the stands, but you can manage them. I mean, and I think, Kim, you kind of alluded to that when you talked about the uncontrollables. You know, don't try to control it, but you can manage them. So, you know, some of the bad behavior that goes on, there was a story last week at a club basketball game. My grandkid was playing, and somebody walked up and said in the gym across town, my grandfather walked into the gym, and he sat in the wrong section unknowingly and was rooting for his team. And, of course, then the heckling started, and whatever they were saying to him, his son happened to be keeping score. He got involved. Things escalated. The cops had to come, and that's where it escalated to. So, you know, things get crazy, and those big stories make a lot of noise out there. You know, you hear a lot about them, and, you know, everybody's talking about it at the tournament, and sometimes they make headlines. But I think one of the things we like to address at the IDU Sports Commission is the smaller stories, the ones that don't make headlines, the hundreds and hundreds that go on, you know, every weekend, all the time, in their car ride home, around the dinner table conversation, around the office cooler, just the negative talk that goes on. That's the stuff we're really after, is those smaller stories to change the culture and change the way of thinking, because you have to change the way people think before you can change their behavior. So that was probably too much, but go ahead.
No, thank you. I'd just like to remind our radio audience, you are listening to a City Club of Boise Forum, Flagrant Foul, the Growing Problem of Incivility in Youth Sports. There's a question that was posed here, and it's a good one, I think. A little off topic, a little different topic, but it says, sports are so expensive now. We've talked about club ball and all this involvement at a very young age. You know, even in public schools, it seems low-income kids get left out. Are there programs to involve those kids? John, I don't know, maybe that's something you could talk to?
Yeah, absolutely. So our district, we do offer basketball for boys and girls starting in fifth grade, and track for boys and girls starting in fifth grade. But I know the YMCA starts Y-ball, and for any family that would be struggling with the financial commitment to play Y-ball, I know the Y has scholarships for our families to do that. And that starts, you know, clear down into third and fourth grade for our kids. All of the organizations, Optimus Football, Little League, Youth Soccer, Treasure Valley Lacrosse, you know, and I'm not saying them all, I'm missing a few, but I know that they all have scholarships to help kids, low-income families, so that they can participate. You know, one thought, just this is a personal thought. my oldest son, who played varsity football, varsity basketball, he didn't play any club basketball and did not do any of that. And it wasn't because I was against it. I think there's a lot of positives to it. He just didn't want to. He wanted to have some other things that he wanted to do with doing three sports, and he just didn't feel like he had the time to do all of that with his academics and AP classes, and so he chose not to. And sometimes I mention that to parents just because you don't have to do all of that. You just don't have to, you know, why put 1,000 bales of hay in the barn when I'm only going to feed the cattle 100? You know, you're going to be just fine. Kids make it, and kids make varsity teams, and kids can go on and play college and not have to put all of that expense, time, talent, treasure, all of that to make it, whatever that is. And so, anyway, whether, you know, we do have a lot of support, and we're very fortunate in the Treasure Valley to have the support to where our kids can be involved in that.
Great. Thank you. You know, here's a comment and a question. You know, it said they heard of a college incident happening at the college level. I mean, we even see it sometimes at the NBA level. You know, it's been a few years, but players going into the stands, things like that. You know, the question is, you know, how can we expect to change behavior for youth when they see it at such a high level being demonstrated? Any comments on that? Tim, you got anything on that?
Well, what changing the behavior, as I mentioned, one of the things we do in these workshops is we do workshops for parents, coaches, and athletes. And John, you can probably hit on this as well. But sometimes the kids can teach the adults. We do these workshops where we teach young athletes how to honor the game. And we have this word called roots that I'll let John take off with. He teaches it well in workshops, but it's the respect of the rules, the opponents, officials, teammates, and yourself, and how you bring all those together. The coaches learn that as well, the parents, those three things, we get them on the same page, talking the same language. So you have to kind of get everybody involved speaking the same language to change the behavior, if that makes sense.
Great. I'd love to just tag on to that. I remember a time as a principal at the Capitol for about 3 years. It seemed like all the kids that were coming to the game, they were watching college basketball games on TV on Saturday, and they were watching what their student sections were doing, and then they would try to kind of compile together and get organized, and then they would bring those behaviors to our game. And so I had to, like, stay, you know, a step ahead of the kids a little bit in the fact you'd be like, where did they come up with that? And where did they learn that? And how did that happen? And so you have to kind of stay a step ahead of them a little bit, and you got to meet with them going, okay, what's going on? And where did you guys learn some of those chants and some of those little routines that they were doing? And they were learning from the college game or maybe possibly the pro game that was on TV. And so those influences can come into your school, and they can come into, you know, youth athletics, and you got to be ready to combat that, because, you know, we're just going to kind of live up to our own standards, regardless of what other people do. We're going to have standards, and we're going to protect those, and we're going to live up to those.
Sean?
Yeah, I think, John, just what you just said about having standards, it's. All the stakeholders need to hold each other accountable for that. So as an official, I have a rule book, and if a coach gets out of hand or a player gets out of hand, I have a rule book, and I can call a foul or a technical foul or that sort of thing, so I can hold them accountable for their behavior. Schools and administrators can hold their coaches responsible. So this, you know, the positive coaching thing that is being discussed, I think, is a great idea. One of the biggest indicators that I can tell as far as how difficult a game is going to be from just the noise is the coach behavior, because typically parents and coaches are going to mirror how the coach behaves. And that goes both ways, because again, you know, so coaches can hold their parents accountable. They know who the talkative parents are, or probably the same ones who are complaining about their kid not getting enough playing time and that sort of thing. So if they can help the parents understand what their role is, but then that goes the other way around as well. So that if parents aren't a fan of how their coach is acting, then parents need to be able to work with administrators. Again, now, obviously, that can be a problem as well, because you don't want, you know, I'm sure that's that there's a lot of coach turnover as well because of parent involvement and how parents are interacting with coaches and things like that. But I think that if, you know, if between parents and school administrators and coaches and officials, if we all help hold each other accountable, then we can really make a positive atmosphere.
Great. Probably a good time. There's several questions here, about what are some things that we can do. What are some specific things that parents, coaches, administrators, and the community can do to really address some of the root causes? I mean, you know, we're talking about some of the symptoms and stuff like that, but what are some of the things, maybe some of the things you're doing now, and some things that we can do to really address some of those root causes?
I think one of the biggest things is just communication. I know within my program that's been a really important aspect. And, you know, coaches, I think sometimes you get frustrated with parents, but we have to remember that these parents are just trying to advocate for their kids. That's all they're trying to do. They're trying to be their advocate, and we're trying to be their advocate too. So I think the more frequently we can communicate, a lot of coaches are afraid of that communication. They're afraid of reaching out. They're afraid of walking into the stands and saying, "Hey, Dave, good to see you." You know, they're afraid of those things. But I think that that's something. I know my predecessor, Harry Angelos, he always made a point when we put together our program contact list, he made sure that we wrote down the first names of the parents of each one of those kids. And that's for all three teams. And that's always stuck with me as something that's really important, because it makes a big difference if I can walk up after a game and, you know, "Hey, Libby, you know, Elle played great today. That was awesome." You know, and just using that first name is such a disarming thing. And for them to know that I know their first name and that I care about their kid, I think that's a big, important aspect of what we do. So I send out emails a ton. I mean, thank goodness for distribution lists. It's made it so much easier. But I'm constantly informing everybody, all three of our teams, this is what's going on. We needed a big crowd last night for our game, so I blasted out, I think, like 250 emails. Any parent that sent a kid to a camp in the last year got an email from me on Monday saying, "Please come to our game on Tuesday night." And the whole purpose of that was, let's pack this gym with people that love our program, that support our kids, and that want to be there for the right reasons. So I think that communication is really, really important. And any young coach, I would say, make sure that you're okay doing that. You know, make sure that you're reaching out. And once they know that you care about their kids, I think that's when you really sell those parents.
Great. Maybe a good time for you, John, to talk a little more about the program.
Yeah, thank you. So, like I said, I want to just kind of focus a little bit about PCA. And I'm going to do this real quickly. And there's quite a bit to this. It's a mile wide and a mile high. But first of all, it all starts with the umbrella of this is all about what we're trying to do for the student. And basically, it breaks down to just two goals. We're trying to build better winners and better people. Better winners, better people. And so in the coaching workshop, I mean, how have you played youth sports, high school sports, college sports? How many athletes have played that? So I bet right now, if I were to ask you to think of a coach that made a difference in your life, that cared about you, that took the time to get to know you, all of that, I hope, I would pray, that everybody at least has a coach in their mind going, "Oh yeah, I could tell you about Coach Bridges. I could tell you about Coach Smith," right? Well, PCA did the same thing. They started engaging with people saying, "Well, you had a positive experience in athletics. Tell me about that. What was it that was positive?" And what they found in their research is there were three things that for a coach to build a system that would be a positive experience for a student, that first of all, there was connection. There was connection between the players and the coach and the players and the players. There was connection, obviously positive connection. Second, the research said that the kids could grow and that they could learn. That at the start of the season, maybe I wasn't a very good shooter, but by the end of the season, wow, look how far I've come. So if you think about your positive experience, I'll bet there was connection And I'll bet that you had the opportunity to grow and to learn and to get better. And then the third thing is integrity. They found that being on the team meant something. It was a family. It was, that experience in this team was bigger than the game. Like, that was more important to me than the game we're playing tonight. Being together. And so that's what we cover in the workshop for our coaches. Coaches, how will you build connection? And the biggest thing we teach them is make sure that you're given a 5-to-1 positive to corrective balance when you're coaching your kids. 5 positives to 1 corrective. The single most effective way that you can become a better coach is to focus on your 5-to-1 ratio of positives to corrective. And that's the part that Kim was talking about with filling an E-tank. Every kid has an E-tank, and that's short for an emotional tank. And that emotional tank, if it's full, kids can do big things. They can go far. They'll be coachable. They will not be pessimistic. They'll be optimistic. They're going to have a full charge. It's like a gas tank. They're going to go far. By the way, officials have an emotional tank too. Get what I'm saying? And so we talk about that with our coaches. All officials will come with an emotional tank that needs to be full too. We need to think about that. That's how you honor the game, by respecting the official. Now, the second part with integrity and the learning that happens with the coaches, we talk about ELM, which Kim alluded to. We focus on what the kids can control, which is their efforts, getting better and having a growth mindset, and mistakes. How will you deal with mistakes? And we say that mistakes are okay. Mistakes are okay. Because we want the kids to be out on the field in the court playing at 100%, not 65%, because they're worried about making a mistake. And I can tell any time, there's several indicators that you can watch for if mistakes are okay, because when I was in high school, all of my teammates, if they missed a shot in basketball, you know what they'd do? They'd look over at the half court right now and go, oh no, coach is putting somebody in the game for me because I just missed a shot. You remember that, right? You throw the ball away, that's okay. Move on to the next play. These little wristbands that Kim was talking about will have the kids snap out of it. It's just a routine. It's called a mistake ritual. You just snap out of it. You move on to the next play. Shake it off. Flush it. And so we teach the kids and teams what's called a mistake ritual so that mistakes are okay. And then Tim brushed on and talked a little bit about honoring the game. The coaches teach the kids how to respect the rules of the game, how to respect their opponents, their officials, their teammates, and their self. And, the part with opponents, when you have a worthy opponent that you're playing, I don't know if any of you surf or rock climb or, even hunters. you go out hunting, you're looking for the big elk, you're looking for the big deer. If you're a surfer, you're looking for the big wave. If you're a rock climber, you're looking for the big rock to climb. Same thing with an opponent in football, basketball, any of that, wrestling. We want a worthy opponent because that's where you're gonna compete at your highest. But we have to teach kids how to respect that, and that's how they honor the game. Now, that's a little bit about coaches. With parents, these workshops are about an hour. The coaching workshop is about 2 hours. The first thing that we really get into with parents is really breaking them into groups and talking about their goals. What do they want out of, like I was talking about earlier, what do we really want for your child when it's all said and done? So I ask them questions like, are your goals to become a good athlete for your child? Is it to learn to play the sport, learn teamwork, win, gain self-confidence, learn to deal with defeat, physical fitness, learn lifestyles, life lessons, have fun, make friends, scholarship, varsity letter, to be a starter? I just go through a whole bunch and I start to have them rank what's important to them. And I'm telling you, I've done probably as many as 10 parent workshops, and all of these things that they choose, they very rarely choose win or scholarship. They choose the things that really we value as well. Hard work and have fun and life lessons. So what we teach them is, how do you stay to that goal? I'll just give you a couple little tidbits. One of the things that we ask parents to do is to not do directional cheering. Okay, so directional cheering, it kind of sounds funny when you hear that, but really what that is when at the basketball game last night for Kim on Tuesday, if her wing gets the ball and her name is Emily, how many people are yelling at Emily what to do? Emily, shoot the ball, dribble to the corner, no, dribble to the penetrate, no, reverse it, dribble, left hand, right hand, shoot it, right? And so we teach parents to let directional coaching go to this person. The coach gets to do the directional. What you can do is encourage your child, appreciate their effort, focus on the things that they can control. Your energy, your enthusiasm, you're working hard. That was great effort. Keep it up. You can do this. Because that's what the kids want from the parents when you talk to them. You want to hear an interesting tidbit that PCA did? They interviewed college athletes and said, what was your worst memory? What was your worst memory of youth sports? You know what the college athletes said? 85% of them said this, that their worst memory was the car ride home with their parents. 85%. It wasn't a coach. It wasn't an official that didn't let them score or whatever.
Was that second?
It was. That wasn't second or third either. But I find that interesting. I can remember that with my own parents. I was the youngest of four, and I watched my brother and two sisters go through that process with my parents. And really, in the end, when I came around, I'd come home from a varsity basketball game, and my dad would say, you know, I'd ask him, Dad, how'd you think I did? And my dad every time would just say, well, son, how do you think you did? And so I would say something. Oh, I thought I played really good. He might be thinking, really? That was good defense? He might have, but he never let me know that. He just listened and shook his head, and then he would follow it up with this every time. Well, Mom and I sure enjoyed watching you play. Now, my dad got it right, but it was over the course of four kids. That was not the experience that my older brother got. That was not the experience my two sisters who played college basketball received as well. But through a process, and I did the same thing. My older son, I was thinking about my car ride with him. I coached his Optimus football team and all his AAU basketball and Y ball. And then I did it better with my second son. That's why God gives you more than one child. You can get it right the second time.
Thanks, John. I just want to ask John, you know, fan behavior. I mean, you know, you're going to hear oohs and ahs, right, on calls. You know, I mean, what's good fan behavior look like at a game when it comes to, you know, that?
Focusing on the positive, cheering the players, and letting the officials do their work. Let the coaches coach and let the officials officiate. Realize that we are very, very, very human. And even though the big schools, the colleges and the pros will have instant replay, and if you can slow it down to 1/32nd of a second and you can say, oh, look at that, they missed the call. When that's happening in real time, it's a different story. So realize that there's a human element. And then also think of it that way. Just like you wouldn't yell at your kid for dribbling it off their foot or missing the pass. You wouldn't yell at them, say, you idiot, what are you doing? Are you blind? You're horrible. Go back to junior high or whatever. You wouldn't say that to your kid. And probably not a good idea to say it to the coach. So why would you say it to the official? Think about that perspective. I have four boys and a daughter. So with three teenage boys at home right now, my tolerance to things is challenged sometimes. So if my kids do something, you know, why is there a new hole in the wall? I can't just emotionally react. And that's the problem with sports, is that it's emotional. We tend to react. Whatever your parenting style is, whether it's count to 10 or go for a walk or, you know, go whatever, focus. If you could do that in the stands, I think that would go a long way. And realize, too, that the other thing I think of, too, is if the officials had the cameras and we were focusing on your behavior and we could replay to you what you missed, how, exactly. How would that go over? So just keep that perspective in mind.
Thank you. Tim or Kim, any last words here? We're about out of time here.
All last words. So the Idaho Youth Sports Commission, we're a nonprofit organization, and John said we do give grant money to these organizations to implement this positive culture into their school or youth sports organization. So we have a fundraiser on March 28th that we raise a lot of funds to do this. So if anybody would like to come on March 28th to the Boise Center, we have a dinner auction. Dan Hawkins will be speaking. And so come on out. We'd love to have you. Or if anybody out there, your business or corporation or group, want to sponsor a workshop, want to be a part of this better players, better people in our community for our youth, come talk to us. We'd love to partner with you. The West Ada School District just signed a 3-year agreement with us to have the Positive Coach Alliance for every coach and parent in their school district. So we're just getting going, and I can see the demand and the want and the pressure for these workshops, which means more money on our end. So we entertain any help that you can give us.
Thank you. Kim, anything?
I just want to say thank you for having this. I think it's a really great conversation, and just really proud to be part of PCA and all the stuff that John introduced to me. I know that this is my 15th year as head coach, but I'm constantly growing and learning and trying to improve, just like Sean is on the officiating end. And so I'm just really thankful to what our district is offering and also to what Tim is supporting with the PCA elements.
Thank you. Appreciate our panelists for being here today.
This broadcast of the City Club of Boise was made possible with help from the Idaho Statesman, Idaho Public Television, KBOI, and Boise State Public Radio. Additional support comes from the University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Northwest Nazarene University. The City Club is a nonpartisan forum with the motto, "Things happen when people start talking." Forum series sponsors for the City Club are AARP Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Concordia University School of Law, Echelon Group, Micron, and Pacific Source Health Plans. Additional grant funding comes from the Idaho Humanities Council, a state-based partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The next event from the City Club is a lunch forum on bridging political divides with former Idaho Governor Butch Otter and former Idaho Congressman Walt Minnick on Tuesday, the 17th of March. Find on-demand audio of this and other forums, learn about becoming a member, and see a schedule of upcoming events at cityclubofboise.org or when you call 208-364-4614. Connect on Facebook and Twitter by searching for City Club of Boise.